This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by Douglas, a mattress that is trusted by more than 200,000 Canadians from coast to coast to coast. It's a great mattress at a very reasonable price point. Comes with a 20-year warranty. And a great deal for our listeners. Douglas is giving you a free sleep bundle with each mattress purchase. Get the sheets, pillows, mattress, and pillow protectors free with your Douglas purchase today. Visit douglas.ca/CanadaLand to claim this offer. That is douglas.ca/CanadaLand. This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. There is an incredible facility right here in downtown Toronto that is helping on the front lines and is doing incredible innovative research. They are a facility that treats everybody with dignity, and they need your help. May 6th to 12th is Mental Health Week. If this matters to you, help CAMH. There's no better place for your resources. Go to camh.ca/CanadaLand and donate now. Help CAMH treat addiction and build hope. This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by Paytm Canada. With the Paytm Canada app on your phone, you can manage, track, and pay all of your bills in one place using your bank account, using a credit card, or Paytm Cash. While you're at it, you can get up to 15% cash back on popular retail brand gift cards. Download Paytm Canada and use the code CanadaLand. This episode is also brought to you by HelloFresh, the meal kit service dedicated to making cooking fun, easy, and convenient. They source the freshest ingredients, measure to the exact quantity needed. There's no food waste. It is all delivered to your doorstep in a special insulated box for free. For 50% off of your first box, visit HelloFresh.ca/CanadaLand. Use the promo code CanadaLand. If you want to see Canada, look at my mentions. That's what Jesse Huente wrote on the day that Gerald Stanley was acquitted of the murder of Colton Bushy. He invited everyone to have a look at what people were saying to him on Twitter in response to his feelings of outrage and grief and fear for his kids. What are people saying in response to him? What are people saying in response to other Indigenous people? He said, if you read that, you will see the mirror to find Canada's reflection. So I looked in that mirror and I didn't like what I saw. I spent an hour looking at his mentions. Jesse Huente, of course, is a well-known broadcaster and arts administrator and Ojibwe person. And I looked at the mentions of other Indigenous people I know, Robert Jago and Chelsea Vowell and Ryan McMahon, all of whom were sharing their thoughts on the acquittal. And after an hour of reading with strangers, a lot of them people from Saskatchewan, some of them not, after reading that for an hour, I felt just sick to my soul. It was awful. It was not that it was filled with racial epithets necessarily, though there were some of that. I think that almost everybody did not think that they were a racist, did not think that they were part of the problem. What was voiced again and again was a lot of calls for, why don't you, Jesse Huente, and you, Indigenous people, take responsibility for this? And those kids got what they were asking for, and this was self-defense. A person has to protect their family and other things that were not actually a part of Gerald Stanley's defense. Very few people actually gave a shit about whether or not it was an accidental death or believed that it was an accidental shooting. As mentioned on the show before, even the people who support Gerald Stanley think that he killed Colton Bushy on purpose, by and large. They're just okay with that. I shared those tweets. I retweeted those people. I encouraged other people to read what they were saying. And people didn't like the way that that made them feel, just as I didn't like the way it made me feel. A lot of people got angry with me, saying, what are you doing in retweeting these horrible tweets? Are you virtue signaling, trying to show that you're a better person than these people? Are you calling them some kind of a name? Or, you know, why are you forcing this into my feed? Why are you using your platform to do this? Look, I don't want anyone to feel awful, and I don't want to feel awful. And I am feeling less awful by the day. I felt really, really shook by this verdict and shook by what I saw about Canada. And I'm a critic of Canada. I'm a critic of a lot of things here, but it never felt as real to me as it did that this is the country that I live in. And I felt like I'll never feel the same, but that goes away. And I don't feel as bad. With each passing day, I don't feel as bad about the acquittal of Gerald Stanley. It's very far away. It has very little to do with my life every day. And I don't want to let it slip away because I can choose to immerse myself in that stuff and see what Jesse Wente's mentions are filled with. He doesn't really have that choice. And any Indigenous person who has a voice in this country, and a lot of people who don't even choose to speak up, have no choice about experiencing those sorts of sentiments all the time just by virtue of being Indigenous. And that is the definition of white privilege, is that I have the option of living in a country where these things don't exist. That privilege is different in other places. It's different in America. You can't pretend that there isn't a racism problem in America. And it's not just historical, because it's just in your face and the way the population breaks down and where everybody lives. So you can go and build a gated community, or you could abandon cities and build suburbs, but it's just always there and you've got to deal with it. Here, we can ignore it. We do ignore it. These feelings go away. And it almost feels like that's by design. Everything gets very, very heated and boils over in the States. And every now and then people take to the streets and sometimes there's a riot. It boils over. Here it's the opposite. We're frozen. We're frozen. And there's a lot of people saying, stop pouring fuel on the racial discontent in Saskatchewan. Stop. Move on to the media. Move on to me. And there is a fear, and this is only coming from non-Indigenous people, you're fomenting some sort of coming race riot. And that never happens. It is a fear that the natives are getting restless and we in the media like to stoke these problems and it's going to have some violent end. The truth is the opposite. We are so quick to move on. And look, that is what I saw, you know, writ large in the headlines and the political response. We were looking for ways to go back to ignoring. Even in regarding it, we're looking for ways to go back to ignoring. The political will to just address this one detail of this racist jury selection system, the government's response to this, they're going to respond to this by trying to fix this racist aspect of the jury selection process, which they have been asked to fix for years by all kinds of different people. So something has to be done. They're going to do that. Something was done. That wouldn't have stopped Colton Bushy from getting shot in the back of the head, but it's a good thing that they should do. And I can see already that whether they do it or not, and if they do it, whether it works or not, because in the States, you're not allowed to racially discriminate on jury selection, but people find ways to do it anyhow. Whatever. The point is, the prime minister has made all sorts of emotional statements about wanting to fix things, and there'll be some sort of effort, and we can move on. Then we see that there is this RCMP Facebook group where a police officer is saying that Colton Bushy got what he deserved. Ralph Goodale, the public safety minister, he has to be responsive. He says, I'm going to look into that. Great. We've reconciled that little problem with that Facebook group. Let's move on. And everyone's playing out their roles here. The opposition says, either the NDP says, well, the prime minister is not doing enough. And the conservatives say, well, this is terrible, but he shouldn't be weighing in on what's before the courts. That's not his role. And we deal with it in our limited capacities from where we're standing. And then we move on. We try to reconcile ourselves with this so we can go back to the way things were. And I guess what I realized throughout all of this is that that is what reconciliation actually means. It doesn't have anything to do with Indigenous people. Jesse Wente, again, he's the one who pointed this out to me. He said, to reconcile with somebody, it means you once got along. You know, you're getting back together with them. We have never had this sorted out. But reconciliation is the age that we're living in. I do believe that. We are in the moment where we are trying to reconcile ourselves with what is happening now, not historically, but now, so that we can just go back to the way things are. And I don't think we're going to be able to do it. So guys, I don't know what to do with this. The story is already in the rearview mirror and the news cycle has moved on and something else pops up. And Joey Knapsweet is a 21-year-old Indigenous man from Fort Albany, Ontario, shot by the police. And if you read the stories about this, you're getting less information about a police shooting than you would. I don't know. I've ever read a story like this, trying to figure out what is happening in this country. I do not know what we all should do. I'm not going to tell you what to do. I don't know what to do myself, but I have a Twitter feed and a podcast. And today I'm going to purpose this podcast towards listening again to what I heard a year ago when I went to Saskatoon to talk about the Colton Bushy case. Maybe you think you've heard all you need to hear about this case, and maybe you're ready to stop feeling the way that we all feel about this case. But I'm going to urge you to listen to this because there is more to this story. And not everyone in this country has the privilege of just moving on. Wait for it. This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by Jennifer Stokes, Matthew Rodrigue, Aaron Finnerty, Lacey Brown, Rebecca Holm, Hannah Schmidt, Caleb Edwards, and Dakota Bergen.
My name is Dakota, and I'm from Ottawa, Ontario, and I support Canada Land because the media is ultimately one of Canada's most significant democratic institutions. And like all democratic institutions, it needs to be critiqued and held accountable in order to be effective. And I think you and the Commons team do a great job of that.
This episode is brought to you by Douglas, a mattress trusted by more than 200,000 Canadians from coast to coast to coast. Trust is important. There are a lot of mattress lies out there, a lot of mattress liars. And I didn't intend the pun, but it occurred to me that there is one as I was saying those words. Listen, I am not lying to you. I have experienced the Douglas mattress. It is an exceptional mattress at a surprisingly affordable price point. It is a mattress that sleeps cool, doesn't have that weird thing in the summer where the mattress gets like an oven. It's a very good product. It's delivered to your house in a box. You don't have to go to a big mattress store. It is a medium firm mattress, which is what Canadians prefer, and it comes with a 365-night trial and a 20-year warranty. What more can I tell you? Douglas is giving our listeners a free sleep bundle with each mattress purchase. Get the sheets, pillows, mattress, and pillow protectors free with your Douglas purchase today. Visit douglas.ca/CanadaLand to claim this offer. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp, therapy online that has served over 3 million people around the world, and it's available here in Canada. And this time of year, we're all emerging from our winter like seclusion and, patio season and socializing, and it can be terrifically fun, but it can also create a lot of pressure. And some people get like anxiety, social anxiety from being out too much. What did Iggy Pop say about social life? It's torture dressed as fun. It doesn't need to be torture. I think it's just about finding like the right balance of how much of other people do you want? I mean, we need each other, but I think that at a certain point, it can become overwhelming. And talking to somebody about yourself, about your social life, about your relationships is a way of gaining insight into what is right for you. It's not selfish to examine that with a professional. And as the largest online therapy provider in the world, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. Listeners of the show get 10% off of their first month at betterhelp.com/CanadaLand. That's better, H-E-L-P, betterhelp.com/CanadaLand. This episode is also brought to you by Paytm Canada. I am valuing more and more as I progress through this life, simplification of chores. Just getting it done. I used to put off paying my bills because I felt like I somehow was like making money or saving money by not, you know, you got to pay your bills. And all that happens when you put it off is that you end up paying all kinds of fees or having things get cut off. And they don't make it easy because you got to pay your bills in multitude of different ways and each website for each different cell phone, this and TV, that. Forget that. Put all of your bill payment in one place. Just do it and get it done. You'll have more time for everything else. And if you use Paytm Canada, you get cash back up to 15% cash back on Canada's most popular brands, like an Amazon gift card or Best Buy. It's just like cash. Using Paytm, it's like getting paid to pay your bills. Download the Paytm Canada app for free onto your phone. And if you use the CanadaLand code, you will get $10 instantly in Paytm cash that you can use to pay off a bill. Once again, Paytm Canada, promo code CanadaLand. Finally, CanadaLand is supported by HelloFresh, the meal kit service dedicated to making cooking fun, easy, and convenient. They are always coming up with new recipes. It is seasonal, it is local, it is fresh. It takes away the chore of meal planning and grocery shopping and a lot of the prep work, and they just send you a box with all that good stuff. And with it comes recipes, tested recipes, that will take 30 minutes or less. For 50% off of your first box, visit HelloFresh.ca/CanadaLand. Use the offer code CanadaLand when you subscribe. I was told not to talk about this with you. When we announced that CanadaLand would be coming here to Saskatoon to talk about Colton Bushy, received comments, public comments on Facebook, emails. What are you doing? Why are you talking about this? This is before the courts. This is not for your podcast. But of course, we have been talking about this. The RCMP has been talking about this. The media has been talking about this. The farmers of this province have been talking about this. Many of you have been talking about this. The whole country has been talking about this. This is a bit of what that sounded like.
Debbie Baptiste's son, Colton Bushy, was shot dead last week near Bigger, Saskatchewan.
Saskatchewan farmer Gerald Stanley is free on bail, waiting to learn his fate. He's charged with second-degree murder in the death of 22-year-old Colton Bushy.
Colton Bushy and his friends had pulled off a rural road and onto a farmyard last week when the shooting took place.
My buddy was going there for help, you know, and then we had a blowout and everything, and he ended up taking somebody's life.
So you weren't going there to steal or attack anyone? Or?
No, we didn't even have nothing stolen in the vehicle, you know, and we're just coming from the river.
Racial tensions worsened with Bushy's friends saying the group needed help with a flat tire.
The case has set off a firestorm, exposing what many say are long simmering racial tensions in the province.
This, to me, is not a race issue. This is being turned into one, and it's just getting out of hand. You're afraid to say anything, and if you come across the wrong way, people just label you racist, and I think that's what's happening here. This is, it doesn't matter what color the person is. It's, if you're defending yourself, then you defend yourself.
We are aware of reports of rural residents carrying firearms, carrying guns in anticipation of or in preparation for a confrontation is not safe for anyone. And we don't want anyone facing potential criminal investigations.
We've had guns on us since day one. Just because it's in the media and the news now, shouldn't be a reason for them to all be scared. We've had them anyway. We're just making it known, if you're coming into our yard stealing our stuff, like, they got to be aware that this is the way we live. This is the way we have to live in the country. We got to protect ourselves from whether it's theft or if it's an animal.
On social media, a slew of hateful comments like these.
Farmer that killed one person for trespassing, shame on you. You should have just shot all four of them and buried them out back.
Ben Couts, a councillor from the municipality of Browning, Saskatchewan, posted a comment about the shooting, which stated, "In my mind, his only mistake was leaving witnesses. Today, the municipality accepted his resignation."
There have been concerns with the police investigation. The SUV Bushy was shot in sat in a Saskatoon towing company's lot before the defense looked at it.
Chris Murphy is the lawyer representing Bushy's family. He says 1 month after the incident happened, he learned the vehicle Bushy was sitting in when he was shot and killed left police custody during the investigation. The missing car could have an effect on the upcoming trial. Because evidence has been destroyed, Stanley's lawyer could apply to have the second-degree murder charged against him stayed.
I want justice, so I don't take it in my own hands. My brother was a man of his community. That's all I can say.
There are so many stories. There's his side, their side. There's two sides to a story, and then there's the truth.
A local pastor told the Saskatoon Star-Phoenix that Colton Bushy is the Rodney King of Western Canada. This is a divisive story, and we are not here tonight to determine whether or not Gerald Stanley is innocent or guilty. And we are going to respect the court's publication ban. But we're going to talk about this tonight. We're going to talk about how this is playing out in our conversations. And we've put together an incredible panel to do that. To my left is Betty Ann Adam of the Saskatoon Star Phoenix, Rob Innes, Associate Professor of Indigenous Studies at the University of Saskatchewan, and Mylon Tatousis, who is a doctoral scholar also of Indigenous Studies at the University of Saskatchewan. Can I have a big round of applause for them and for yourselves for coming out tonight? Betty Ann, like I said, we're not here to weigh the evidence to try the facts of this case, but we do have to have a fact-based conversation, and I want you to give us a reporter's perspective on what you just heard. Not just the facts as they've been reported about this story, but the story of the story itself. Bring us up to date on the story, if you can.
Just an overview. Most people are familiar with the story, but we can't assume that everybody is. On August 9th, of last summer, Colton Bushy, who's a 22-year-old Cree man, was with four of his friends. They had been out swimming that day, and they were drinking. They were on their way home, and they ran into car problems. They had a flat tire, as we heard in the thing. They went into this farmyard, and at this point, we are not sure exactly what happened. We know, though, that the windshield of the car apparently was broken by someone outside. There was verbal exchange. Two of the people from the car ran away. Apparently, Gerald Stanley, who was the father at the house there, 55 years old, fired three shots, apparently. One of the shots killed Colton Bushy. RCMP put out a news release letting people know about this. They included the fact that the people in the vehicle were being investigated for theft. Mr. Stanley was arrested. He was released on bail 10 days later. There's a preliminary hearing coming up in April.
The information that the RCMP provided, that Colton's friends being questioned for a theft investigation, they were never charged.
That's right. That was one of the things that was, for me as a reporter, was a little bit unusual, because the RCMP are usually very circumspect when they are investigating people and prior to charges being laid. From time to time, we'll hear about things. We'll call the RCMP or the municipal police and ask, you know, is this matter being investigated? And the normal response is that we don't talk about investigations until charges are laid. And then even when the news release comes out that charges have been laid, they don't release names until you've been to court and the person's actually been charged formally. So that was a little unusual.
I think that's a really relevant point for us to kind of proceed from, because right from that point on, the messaging of how this was represented became so contentious. That abnormal piece of information, the inclusion of that, spoke directly to what was probably a very loaded situation to begin with. The fairness of the system, law enforcement and the courts, or the perception of fairness, was so important, and right off the bat, we had Indigenous leaders saying, you have essentially provided the public with a counter-narrative, the justification for what happened. When the rest of Canada is told that this is stoking racial tensions, what are those pre-existing racial tensions in a Saskatoon and Saskatchewan context?
Well, first off, I grew up in rural Saskatchewan. I grew up on Palmaker First Nations, 45 minutes west of North Balfour. And for me, it has been very clear since I was brought into this world that there is a certain perception that settler Canadian society has of Indigenous people. And I don't want to get into like naming the actual stereotypes. They are very unsettling and they're very uncomfortable to look at. However, they're still very real. When we're looking at the Colton Bushy case and the incident of the shooting, those were just beneath the surface. They were so easy to gain access to, these assumptions, these preconceived notions that a lot of people heard growing up. In all honesty, that have been reinforced by the media time and time again throughout the years. So they were just an arm's length away when we're looking at these preconceived notions of indigenous people. And they're very accessible. They're conversations that have been maintained since contact, since migrations west, since you know, the founding of Canada. These are very real, tangible, observable stereotypes that are here.
It's interesting, isn't it, that we call it the Colton Bushy case. It's the Gerald Stanley case.
Yeah, exactly. The subject matter is obviously, you know, being linked to Colton Bushy, a brown body on the in the Prairie Provinces.
But the somehow the narrative has shifted to, was he there with good intentions or bad, or were his friends there with good intentions or bad? Rob, what's your take on this?
There was a couple things about the way that the information came across. The way in which the RCMP news release, and then the way in which all news media, from local in Saskatoon to national, they all framed it in fear for property. All the news media saying that there is this fear in rural Saskatchewan of crime. That, to me, unlocked people's inhibition to be public in those comments. People are talking about crime, they're really talking about their fear of young Indigenous men. And this is something that's very much embedded in Saskatchewan. I mean, I have had three first-year white female students tell me that in order to get into the gangs, they have to rape a white girl, right? So the gangs, of course, is Indian gangs, and they are, of course, young Indigenous males, right? Well, you know, there's no way that this is true, but in 3 different years, 3 different people...
Yeah, just to clarify, they're saying that they heard this?
This is what they heard, right? This is what they believe, right? That, of course, has impact on how white women will respond to young Indigenous males, also how white men will respond to young Indigenous males. And I think that what we see is white men believe that their job is to protect their property and their women, right? And so they will then respond to young Indigenous males based on that.
Betty Ann, are we giving short shrift to, you know, if people are getting robbed, they have a right to police protection, they have a right, I suppose, to protect their property. Is this a legitimate story that is somehow getting turned into something else? I mean, you see these stories come and go through the news cycle.
One of the things you have to consider is the timeline of the information coming out. The first information came from the RCMP. When the media, when reporters hear about a story, the first thing you do is you gather up all the available information. And the first place you always go is to the RCMP or the police for the official story. That's your starting point, and then you go. You go and get what you can get. But you start with the official information. That's where the idea was introduced about property. In that initial news release, it wasn't just a homicide. The element of property came in, and we've heard some comment on that. Immediately after that, one of our own reporters got in the car, and he was out there. And he went and spoke to one of the men who was in the car. That is excellent journalism. For the Star Phoenix, I'm very proud to say that it was our paper who did that first. And we, as quickly as possible, like 24 hours after that happened, we had the voice of the people who were in the car saying what happened. And so the story, the narrative that most of you have heard, came from the media going out and doing their job and gathering firsthand account of what happened. And it's an interesting thing when you talk about this being the Colton Bushy case, that's a two-sided thing, because I'd never kind of made that connection before, because we all know the Kurt Dagenais case, the guy who killed the RCMP officers. And people don't call it the Robin Cameron story. They call it the Kurt Dagenais story. So that's a very good point. However, I personally like that it's the Colton Bushy story, because as an Indigenous person, I want people to not forget the name of that innocent victim. So it's a kind of a two-edged sword there, but should it be called the Gerald Stanley story? Maybe. It's a good point. The next big influx of information came from the Globe and Mail reporting on the information to obtain a search warrant. And that's where a lot of the information that normally, and this is another interesting thing, when there's a bail hearing, the Crown prosecutor tells the judge the information they have that makes them say why this guy should stay in custody. It's normally subject to a publication ban because it could affect the person's right to a fair trial. They don't want a lot of information going out there because you're listening to this, you might be called to the jury. Usually, an information to obtain is sealed. And not always. Sometimes they're left unsealed, and journalists will often go to the courthouse and try to get that information to obtain a search warrant, but they're very often sealed. And in this case, it wasn't. And because the reporter was able to get all that information, a whole flood of information came out as well that added to the story and has added to the narrative.
I mean, this is a story that has evolved through the press and through social media in ways that will affect the trial, which we should talk about. But I don't think we can talk about it without actually talking about what was in that Globe piece. So Joe Friesen in the Globe, he obtained the information to obtain a warrant. This is a police document that he somehow obtained. And it collects the eyewitness testimony of the people involved. And I'm just going to read you a summary of it. Sheldon Stanley, Gerald Stanley's son, told police that he and his father were working on a fence when the Ford Escape pulled onto the property, according to Friesen's story. All of this is according to Joe Friesen's story, which is according to the ITO. He saw the Escape stop near a pickup truck. He saw a young man get out of the Escape and get into the pickup. Gerald Stanley's son is almost certain, according to this story, that the man who he saw get into the pickup truck was not Colton Bushy. He heard the family's ATV start up shortly after, and he saw this unidentified young man go into the pickup. He said that this is when he and his father started to yell, prompting the young man to jump back into the Ford Escape. Sheldon told police that the Escape swerved towards him. He said he was carrying a hammer and used it to smash the Escape's windshield as the Escape was reversing. At this time, Gerald Stanley reportedly kicked in the vehicle's taillight. Sheldon Stanley told police that the Escape then pulled forward, colliding with another vehicle parked in the Stanley's driveway. At this point, he told police that two men got out of the Ford Escape and ran away, leaving Colton Bushy and two women behind in the Escape. Sheldon Stanley says he then ran back into the house to grab truck keys and told police that he heard two gunshots when he was inside, followed by a third as he stepped out. Gerald Stanley told police, according to Joe Friesen's article, that he ran to a nearby shed after he kicked out the Escape's taillight, where he grabbed and loaded one of two handguns registered to him. He told police that he came out of the shed and fired two shots in the air. This next part is what Kiora Watani, who was with Colton Bushy in the Escape, told the police. This is what she's quoted as telling the officers. She said that Bushy was with her in the back seat of the Escape. He climbed into the driver's seat after they struck the parked car in an effort to drive away, but the Escape wouldn't move. She told police Gerald Stanley walked up to the driver's side window and fired a third shot into the back of Colton Bushy's head. Ms. Watani said that she asked Ms. Stanley why they had killed Colton. And she says that Ms. Stanley replied by saying something about property, something about what happens when you come onto people's property. All of this is untested in court. This is a combination of what everybody present told the police. And I think it's worth noting that based on this document alone, nobody's account contradicts anyone else's account. Rob, you brought up earlier the media framing this as about property. I know that there are a lot of people in the farming community who say just the opposite, and I think that they could argue effectively that the media definitely covered the racial angle up and down. Right from the start, we had audio tape and videotape of the Bushy family, the human story, the treatment of Colton Bushy's mom by the cops. It's not like this was ignored. What you'll read on the Farmers with Firearms Facebook page is that the media made this about race, mm-hmm. and they should have made it about property. Right. Because they don't care who comes on their property. They're going to protect their property no matter what. And this isn't about any kind of racism. Right. They say that the few racist comments on their Facebook page have been blown out of proportion, and they remove anybody who says racist things. This is what I was able to read that is still up on that Facebook page. These are public comments. Carrie Andrew wrote, "We are just protecting what we worked hard for from those who are too lazy to work themselves." Hans Smith wrote, "Anyone who disagrees with an Indian or stops them from stealing your farm gas is racist. Shoot, shovel, and shut up." Darren David Gibbons, and this is in all caps, "A man should have the right to protect his home and family and the things he has worked hard for. Shoot them down like gophers. That will end things right quick." I'm leaving out a bunch of them, but I'll end with one that was the most chilling for me. Sandra Mayer wrote, "I had thousands of dollars worth of equipment and tools stolen from my acreage. The RCMP told me, if I shoot them, push them into the house after I was done." That's what somebody said on Facebook. I have no idea if the RCMP told her that or not. I don't think any of those people think they're racist. I think that a lot of Canada is watching what's playing out here and are a little bit shocked by what seems to be an acceptable discourse that is explicitly racist. Mylon, the comments I read were shocking to me. Did they surprise you?
No. 100% out in the open, they do not. And what's more shocking to me is how they come across as shocking, in particular in the Western Prairie provinces, because when we're looking at the journalism or the media coverage, we have to keep in mind that journalists and people coming out to cover these stories aren't necessarily trained or raised to view the history of Canada critically. So, for example, here we're in Treaty 6 territory. We have a relationship with settlers coming here to share in peace and prosperity on this landscape. And the reason I'm mentioning that is specifically, we're seeing a paradigm and a system at play that's oppressing Indigenous people. That has been sort of, you know, in all honesty, a lot of the settlers here in the room, you have been fed settler colonial myths about the history of your country, about this expansion west. Because the history of Canada, from my perspective, is a very brutal, aggressive history. It's not necessarily south of the border stuff, like we see in the United States with the U.S. Indian Wars, but we are seeing injustices play out from day one with the coming of settlers into this landscape. And my people have been tasked since 1876 to try to live in peace and prosperity with the settlers in this community. However, when we're looking at the actual landscape, there's a lot of tensions there. One of the big things right now for me and my research is we're looking at the Western Prairie provinces literally feed Canada, agriculture. Agribusiness is big in Saskatchewan, we know that, right? Maybe that's partly why a lot of people aren't questioning, you know, the farmer work ethic in this province. But why is it my people are hungry on this landscape when our lands are literally feeding Canada and literally feeding the world? Saskatoon is an urban environment on the prairie. Rural Saskatchewan has a different dynamic. It's a completely different landscape out there. I mean, there's a veneer of smiling and giving that classic Saskatchewan, you know, hand on the steering wheel wave when you see somebody pass. But guaranteed that if you start talking politics, if you start talking economics, if you start talking, you know, why Indigenous people are impoverished on our own lands, there's going to be some racism that comes out. So there is a big urban-rural divide in Saskatchewan. And that's most likely why media is ineffective and ineffective in some cases, you know, if you're looking at it critically, is because of that divide.
Betty Ann, would you have published what Joe Friesen published, the ITO?
Yes.
You would have been pretty happy to get that.
Well, you're always trying to get as much information as you can, but you're subject to the law. And so informations to obtain are often sealed by the courts. It doesn't stop reporters from going to the courthouse and asking for them, but 9 times out of 10, especially if it's a high-profile story, you'll find that by the time you get there, they've already locked it down and it's not available.
Do we know that this one was not sealed? Because he just said he obtained it, which could mean a number of things.
Oh, well, I assume that he went to the courthouse and got it.
It's hard to imagine this being leaked.
I'm not a lawyer, but I think that if that document had been sealed and he was using it, then he would have been in a clear violation of the publication ban and he'd have heard about it from the Crown.
Uh-huh. There were more revelations through the media, the chain of evidence being potentially broken with
right.
with the Ford Escape being found just sitting in an open, roofless tow lot. As we heard in the sound montage at the beginning, potentially giving the defense an argument that the evidence is inadmissible, who knows where they're going to go with it. Again, getting back to, are the cops doing their jobs fairly, competently? I feel like a lot of this story has somehow been twisted to whether the shooting itself had any kind of racist motivation, whereas the more live question is not would Colton be alive were he not indigenous, but were he not indigenous, would he get any different treatment? Would there be more justice for Colton?
One of the things about the vehicle, first off, in covering courts over the years, and to use the Kurt Dagenais shooting case again as an example, the vehicles involved in that were all seized by the RCMP and kept in a locked compound, not just in a compound, but inside a building so that they wouldn't be subject to the elements. Those vehicles remained in the police custody for many, many months. And in the trial itself, we spent at least a half a day listening to the evidence of the chain of who was holding the car and where was it and how do we know that it was secure. So it was a big deal. And so this is most unusual if this vehicle was in fact let out of their custody. And then another thing, just because I keep thinking of it, and it's a little bit off track, when Gerald Stanley was taken to the courthouse for his bail hearing, he was dressed in his prison garb, right, the big orange sweatshirt. And when photographers tried to take his picture, they couldn't get his face because his face was covered up with something orange. And I thought, oh, I hate it when they do that. You know, you can't get a picture of them. And I thought about the other guys that I've seen do that. And usually they take the shirt they're wearing and pull it up over their heads or they cover their faces. But when you look at it, Gerald Stanley wasn't doing that. He was using an orange T-shirt. He was wearing handcuffs and a sweatshirt. And he was holding an orange T-shirt that he used to cover his face.
What do you make of that?
What I make of that is that it's exceedingly unusual for the RCMP to allow a prisoner to be holding something in his hands when he goes to court when he's in handcuffs. I've never seen that before.
I don't want to play any kind of predictive games here, but I am curious about whether our focus in the media, the public focus, how much it matters and how much it's going to play a role. I mean, maybe I'll just get you guys to chime in on this. Colton Bushy was either a inspiration in his community and the most optimistic and promising young guy and who was doing all sorts of training to help people with firefighting courses and had this amazing future in front of him, and with his friends had a flat tire and wanted help and ended up getting shot in the back of the head. Or they were vandals, or they were thieves, or perhaps some combination of all of this. How much of this character evaluation do you think is where the story is heading, and how much does it matter?
The focus seems to be going into what kind of person was he like. The question should be, well, what kind of person, what were the motives of the suspect? It seems like the victim will be put on trial, which it seems kind of odd in a murder case to be evaluating and assessing the victim's character when the person who's charged with the murder, at least at this point, it doesn't seem like that is the case. We don't know anything about Stanley when we usually know a lot about a suspect.
If there is a self-defense case that Stanley was acting in self-defense when he shot Colton Bushy, we don't have that story yet. Maybe we'll get it at trial. Mm-hmm. But we haven't even heard that narrative yet. Failing that surprise testimony that paints a very different and compelling picture. Mylan, I won't ask you to speak for any particular community, just for yourself and your own sensibility about this. It's hard to think of a greater statement of inequality than if there is a sense that people can be murdered without consequence. Mm-hmm. If that is the conception at the outcome of this, what do you think that is going to mean? And I'm not even just talking about will there be protests, will there be riots? I'm talking about what does this mean for this story we're telling ourselves of reconciliation in this country right now?
Well, what has all the loss we've experienced in the past meant? Because there is still missing and murdered Indigenous women. You know, there are still missing cases of Indigenous people who don't have any justice brought to them, historically speaking. And that's what we have to realize, is that Colton Bushy and what took place last summer is not just a singular event to Indigenous people. There's an ongoing history and reality that's been playing out for a very long time. I mean, let's use the Husky oil spill, for example. You know, there's families who have been involved at the Bushi case who've been doing their best to come to terms and figure out what took place with the Husky oil spill in the North Saskatchewan River. So these are compounding impacts and have ramifications to who we are as Indigenous people and how we live our lives. If Gerald Stanley gets left off the hook, I can't speak, like you said, for any specific community, but the question I have to ask is, what is rock bottom for Indigenous people? Where is that? And how does it look? How deep do we have to go? And that's even a question to settler Canadians, is what is rock bottom for this country? You know, how far are we willing to carry forth this agenda of oppression and settler colonialism? Right? We lost a really great leader, Arthur Manuel, known all across Canada, and he brings forward the question that there's not enough land for Indigenous people to prosper. Right? And we're looking at, like I said before, Saskatchewan. You know, there's our lands are literally feeding the world, and we're starving, and there's really big injustices playing out. But that's the question I have to ask, is what is rock bottom, and when are we going to get there? I don't know any formulation of any, you know, tactics other than what Indigenous people have been trying to do in terms of educating, in terms of, you know, getting our education, in terms of doing events like this, and trying to elevate the consciousness of Canadians and non-natives and even our own people. But that's the question, is where is rock bottom?
I'd like to thank our panel very much. Thank you. That's your Canada Land Show. If you want to email me about it, you can do so by sending something to jesse@canadalandshow.com. I read everything you send me. We are on Twitter @CanadaLand. The next episode, the second episode of Oppo, our new politics show with Jen Gerson and Justin Ling, will be out tomorrow, and it is a good one. Go subscribe now. Our news stories are published on our website, canadalandshow.com. You can also get them on our Facebook page. Hit like, and they will come to you. We also, by the way, have an RSS feed for our news stories, and you can find that on our website as well. Our crowdfunding site is patreon.com/CanadaLand. The original Saskatoon broadcast you heard today was produced by Katie Jensen, and this rebroadcast is produced by Ali Graham. Syndication is by CFUV, 101.9 FM in Victoria. Visit them online at cfuv.ca. And if you like what we do, please support us on Patreon.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.